because we got the alternative energy. Right. On nuclear free autonomy.
And welcome to the Radioactive Show, produced at the studios of 3CR Melbourne and heard nationally on the Community Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to the Radioactive Show. The 27th of September marks the anniversary of the first British atomic test at Maralinga in South Australia in 1956. Between 1952 and 1957, three tests were carried out at the Montebello Islands off the coast of Western Australia, followed by nine nuclear weapons tests at Emu Field and Maralinga in South Australia. The British nuclear testing program was carried out with the full support of the Australian government, and permission was not sought for the tests from Aboriginal people whose lands were used as sacrifice zones. The use of atomic weapons contaminated great tracts of land, displaced and forced Aboriginal people into government and mission-controlled enclaves, and many Aboriginal people were exposed to the fallout and died, and survivors suffered radiation sickness and often long-term injury or illness. The intergenerational impacts of the atomic testing continue to impact people to this day. And this history informs the work of many of the Australian Nuclear Free Alliance members, having been directly impacted by nuclear weapons. Today we're bringing you some of the conversations from the Australian Nuclear Free Alliance gathering at Pitchie Ritchie Park in South Australia over the weekend of 29th to 31st of August. And this session was titled Nuclear Weapons and Survivors, International Solidarity and Protocols. In this first section, we'll hear Dimity Hawkins from the Nuclear Truth Project and Yankunjara Anangul woman Karina Lester speaking about the principle of free, prior and informed consent in relation to nuclear weapons.
So let's start with free, prior and informed consent. And this is an important concept when we're talking about weapons, as we'll talk about shortly. But the first one is free. Let's break it down. Free, what does that mean? It means that no one has the right to push you or bully you or coerce you into making a decision.
Free, prior and informed consent.
Prior, of course, means before. It means anything before they start any project, they should be taking into account and talking to mob first. Informed means that they have to fully inform the community about the project. No bullshit, right? They have to fully inform the community. They've got to talk true about what the project is. And consent means agreement or disagreement, like the decision, basically. And the idea of the decision is a real collective one. It's the decision together, one way or the other. And that's really important, that collective decision. And this is one that is an important part of Indigenous people's ways of making decisions for communities forever across the world. Same here, right? And so it's about a full consent. So communities who say no, or individuals within communities who say no, there's a process that still needs to go through. Cultural way, traditional ways have to be taken into account to get consent or disagreement. So I hope that's helpful to everybody to understand where this idea comes from, and also to understand that this is an idea that comes out of the Universal Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. This declaration was made by Indigenous people all around, First Nations people all around the world, put this agreement together, and they fought for it and they worked for it over decades to say, these are our standards, this is important to us. And that's what was worked for really hard, and from this idea came the free, prior, informed consent. So it's a big process that's happened all over the world to bring it here. The Australian government has signed on to the Universal Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, UNDRIP, it's called, short way. They haven't brought it into process exactly, but as we heard yesterday from Jim and others, this is becoming an accepted understanding, this idea of free, prior and informed consent, and it's becoming an understanding that this is a powerful force that we have.
We, as First Nations mob in this room, need to be really pushing it with our groups and with our broader community as well about free, prior and informed consent. And it certainly didn't happen in 1953. So 1953, on the 15th of October, was the first mainland test that took place here in Australia and in our state of South Australia. And I'm quite surprised that not very many South Australians know this story as well. And certainly the next generation are not going to know this story unless it's up to us, and that onus on us as survivors and second generation survivors or third generation survivors to keep this story alive and to really remind our fellow South Australians about what happened back then in 1953, because one patrol officer did not get that free, prior and informed consent from Yanwundjarajuda, from Arnongajuda, who were there living at Wajajara at that time in the community 27 kilometres west from Malabor, a place called Wallatina, is where my late father Yami Lester was. And it was something that he certainly spoke up, but it took 30 years after the fact to really raise the important, you know, stories that were coming out from country, from our traditional lands, through that Royal Commission of the McClellan Royal Commission into the British nuclear testing. So Dad carried a lot of trauma for 30-odd years before he got some form of justice. It was 4 years after 1953 that Dad lost his sight, so these tests took something away from Dad, and I think that was part of the fire in his belly, I think, and he also heard an ABC interview that Sir Ernest Titterton was talking on ABC and said that the blackfellas were taken good care of. And Dad said that that was not the case. And it was important to really speak up about what he witnessed as a young boy on his traditional lands and to really push hard. And, you know, thanks to Dad's leadership and kindness and, you know, his great way of thinking after losing his sight. He really had a way of engaging with the community and speaking with his people and using the system as well. Because a Royal Commission doesn't just come about. You've got to really push hard from a legal angle as well. And he was Binyera Council director at that time. So he worked with Binyera Council's lawyers to start that process and get that ball rolling for the Royal Commission into the British nuclear testing, and to speak up about what happened in 1953. That first mainland test was where Wallatina had the highest radiation fallout over our traditional land. So went up, black smoke, and then broke away. And you see some of the old footage and photos of where this black cloud breaks and then falls as it loses its altitude. It came and fell over Wajajara at Wallatina. And Nanamob's testimonies when they gave evidence in that Royal Commission was, it came with a strong toxic smell, but it was a very oily, heavy substance that fell over the camp. And that was traumatic, you know. They knew about dust storms. They knew, you know, when dust storm was rolling in, it came with noise and wind and things were getting picked up. But this black smoke moved silently, which then caused trauma within the community, panic within the community. They didn't know what they were doing. Nanamov started digging holes in the sand dune to protect the children from this black, sooty smoke substance that was falling heavy, oily over our traditional lands. And,
you know, soon after, it would have been this time, around morning time, when they were witnessing this black mist falling over our traditional lands. And then by, you know, afternoon, people were starting to get sick. And a lot of the evidence that was gathered was around, you know, elders passing, Nanamob getting skin rashes, diarrhea, you know, blindness, of course, sore eyes. And then within 4 years of that test, Dad went into complete darkness. And so his world completely changed. Many of those older generation had died. There were stories from Nana Angelina Wongo, who spoke about digging graves for her parents. And so that trauma was carried for decades and for generations as well. It's not something that I want to be doing. It's something that I've led into because of our personal family story, from eyewitness accounts from Emu Fields through to, you know, our own battles and struggles with waste dumps, with Gulbabidi Gungwadjurda, but then also, you know, Royal Commissions into the nuclear fuel cycle in 2015, you know, constantly having to remind and speak of that trauma and that story of what people had witnessed when that first test took place on the mainland. Then there was a second test at Emu Fields on the 27th of October 1953, again on our traditional lands, causing damage to our traditional stories, our wabar, our jugurba. They were there. They were witnesses. They were saw and witnessed these mushroom clouds go up over our traditional lands and contaminate and damage and delete all that knowledge that our ancestors left before us. And that's hard to explain to a Western system out there, you know, to talk about the spiritual, cultural damage that's been taken away, our intangible cultural heritage deleted in one act of government coming in and testing their nuclear weapons. And it's a challenging space to talk about that as well, to get Western decision makers and Westerners to understand the impact, the trauma and the mental trauma on us as well, on what has been taken away from their actions as well. So Totem 1 and Totem 2, 1953, they then realised, the British government and the Australian government, that that location was quite remote and they needed to go closer to some transport route. And that's when they moved down to Maralinga Jarodja, and they moved down to family down that side, Bijanjarajurda, and our family down that end, where they continued that testing program for many years then on the number of tests. So I'm going to hand it over to Maralinga Wajajurda. Family can talk about, you know, stories and what their eyewitness accounts as well. But again, that reminder of that lack of free, prior and informed consent happening back then, and fast track to 2025, and again, First Nations peoples are not having the opportunity to really understand what industry is wanting to do, so we can have the opportunity to make that free, prior and informed consent. So I'm going to hand it to Maralinga Jarodja Mob to share their story as well.
That was Karina Lester and Dimity Hawkins opening a session at the Australian Nuclear Free Alliance meeting on nuclear weapons and survivors, international solidarity and protocols. You're tuned to the Radioactive Show, produced in the studios of 3CR Community Radio on unceded Kulin lands in Fitzroy and broadcast across the continent thanks to the Community Radio Network. Alongside the 12 major nuclear weapons tests that scattered radioactive fallout across the continent, there were hundreds of so-called minor trials that left the land scattered with extremely toxic plutonium with a half-life of 24,000 years. When the Maralinga nuclear testing ended in 1967, highly radioactive waste from the tests was also buried in shallow trenches and topped with concrete. After the Royal Commission into the atomic tests that we heard Karina speak about earlier, a second cleanup was undertaken, but this was also done on the cheap. And despite the site being handed back to the Maralinga Jaratja, contamination issues remain to this day. Next up, we'll hear from Roslyn Peters, Anangu woman from the Yalada community, Sister Michelle Madigan, longtime nuclear free campaigner based in Adelaide, and Sue Hazeldine, Gugatha elder based in Ceduna, far west South Australia.
The people was walk the land, Maralinga area, place called Uldia. They settled in there. Missionaries saw them and kept them and put our mother and father into homes. The whole people were sleeping around on the sand hills when their children was in home that time. And they couldn't go back because British soldiers could destroy land other side, Maralinga, atomic bomb. And people couldn't go back, you know. They waited a long time and the missionary took them back to a place called Yalata. And they was there, not to Yalata, they went halfway to Uldia tank. Missionary told them to stay there, you know. They were slowly settling down to go to Yalata. But they waited for a long time. Some of them went back and got their children out of home in Uldia. They walk all the way back to Uldia Tank, took all the kids out. They stayed there for a long time. And they told that they're not allowed to go back, to walk back to Maralinga area, you know, place called Oak Valley. But they got frightened. And some of them, old people, they already been infected, you know, from that radioactive, you know, that fume, you know. When they've been put the bomb, some old people got sick already. At that time, they've been like living around like place to place, you know. Never went back to Yalada properly, you know. They're living around on the side. And finally, the missionary went and got them, you know, and took them back. Yalada, and when they moved back to Middle Yard, and then old people, they've been like dying there, you know. They already got been infected inside sickness, you know. So missionary gave them like, they didn't know. Missionary gave them flour, you know, flour and sugar and tea, and they put a poison in there. Because they're not allowed to keep all the people like that, you know, old people like that. It was too many. But they was eating, they made a damp and gave it to them, you know. They've been eating, and they want to sleep. They thought they would have a little rest, you know, sunshine. But they've been like slowly dying. Because they've been got that sickness. They got the sickness and then they went move back to Yalata. And since then, they're getting ready for a meeting, you know. To go back to the land, the government came and told them, we're going to go back and hand over this one here. A lot of people, the old people, we lose them all, you know, they're all gone. And they were, then where the government came and told them, you gotta go back, you know, to the land and then settle down. So they gave a paper, they put a little boy on top. Got the land back and over. So they went back and they got the land and went back and settled in there. And then some of them was still dying, you know, dying. They got infected inside. Then they don't know they got sickness inside. But me are born and bred at Yalada. But our parents born in Uldia, but our great-grannies, grandfathers, they come from the other side, Maralinga area. And they went, they was having meeting, you know, big meeting. Government came. They told them, like, clean up, you know. And they cleaned the mess when pretty sure they've been made a mess. A little bit they clean up. And they can, like, say people, you know, can explain to people, you know, that they don't know something good there, you know. People still living there, now, right now. I don't live there. Yeah, hopefully. But they go to Maryland, they have meeting. They go back. Oh, that meeting, tourists goes there. But, you know, you can't go with barefoot and walk around there. Not that. We're frightened to go there.
It was 34 years that the people got banned from going back. But then the Bidinjarra people and Yankunjarra people, hey, Karina got their land rights back. Big struggle, but they did it. And then Maralinga mob were refused by Barry Lindner, the CEO at the time, from joining in with the Bidinjarra people, Yankunjarra people, for that big land right. So then they started, had to start it all over again. But in 1985, that right, 40 years ago, they actually, after another big long campaign, got their land back. So that's these two, well, four, the other two, too. You'd just been to that big celebration, wasn't it, 2 weeks ago. 40 years they got their land back after being banned all that time.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was born at Canibba and I was only 2 years old when they started the Maralinga test. And, of course, the winds brought all that poison across to us too. But at the moment, I am fighting the rocket mob. And now what they're doing too is very similar to what happened with the Maralinga mob too. They didn't ask consent, or they didn't get mine anyway. And when I was out on country with a group of friends, we were sitting in and saying, no, you can't send these rockets off. It was like Maralinga all over again. They knew we were there on country. They didn't give a damn. They sent their rocket up over the top of us anyway. They didn't even care where the fallout was going to happen. So there you go, it's still going on. Maralinga happened, and it's still bloody well going on now with this rocket testing. We have no idea what their guided missiles are going to be carrying. For we know it could be little nuclear warheads. But they want to test that on our country as well. No consent again. Oh, they do, sorry, they do have consent from some of our mob, the Kunibba Council and the Far West Coast Aboriginal Native Title mob. But they don't have my consent, and I'm going to stand by that. That was not free, prior and informed, because what they did to our people was they had worked for 2 years with the Kunibba Council before they even told us that they were what they were planning. Nobody had any idea what was going on. And I'm likening it to Maralinga, because they could well and truly bloody blast us again. They poisoned us once. Let's not let them do it again. This is Australia-wide, okay?
Thank you, Aunty Sue. So it's a big story, the nuclear weapons story, and it's happened all over the world, unfortunately, but mostly on Indigenous lands, on colonised lands. This is a story that we've heard a lot. Karina and I were in New York this year. I've got a video up here. It's going to make you embarrassed, but doesn't matter. This is you talking at the UN and absolutely giving it to the Australian government. It's a proud moment for us when we have Karina speaking up internationally. You know, to stand with Karina, walking around, meeting all these people from all over the world. Same when Aunty Sue is over with us at the United Nations. When people come out and they meet this and hear the Australian story, and they hear the story of resistance here in Australia, it's such a powerful thing. And it's matched and beautifully welcomed by so many First Nations mob around the world. I think it's also really a powerful thing to talk about, the solidarity that we build with other groups around the world.
Well, just really quickly, that need to stand in solidarity, the need and the real importance of everyone standing in solidarity, going out because you're so focused in your little area, and I was focused on Wallatina and the trauma that took place there. and really wanting to get that story out, and through ways such as, you know, ICAN and the work that the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons has done, it's so important to get that story out internationally as well. And then to learn and know that it's a global issue has, in a crazy way, found comfort for us within the victim circle, those of us that sit within affected communities and our stories, joining those dots to again stand globally in solidarity was something so important for us to really share, learn, hear and fight together as well at, you know, big events like the United Nations, voicing, you know, pushing hard to get our countries to sign on the Treaty of the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons. You know, we all stand together to push that lived experience, and that was something really strong and important. And it needs to happen at all levels, internationally, for us as a country and nation and our mobs, all of us mob here in this room and all our families back on our countries, to find our voices and to really send strong messages out to, you know, our country and push hard for Australia to sign and ratify this Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons is a big part of our stories and our lived experience. And I just want to say we all need to stand in solidarity. We need to support one another. We need to stand together to really be strong, to speak up about the traumas and what we carry and why we also stand strong as Arnoiwata and as all our mobs across our state of South Australia. There's a history there. We stand up against that history. We've been part of that whole journey and we've been sending strong messages, but we need to get all our mobs as a nation together as well, to know that they're not alone, and so important for us to stand together in solidarity through our individual battles, you know, whether it was Atnyamatna and the country over there, Aunty Regina, the importance for us mob to all stand together. The Royal Commission we did in 2015 through to 2017, that was a big call out for all of us nations, First Nations mob, to stand together and really fight against that Royal Commission into that nuclear fuel cycle. And it was a big part of influencing those jurors as well, that we stood united. And that's just one little message I want to say, that we all need to stick together on this one, because we've got those cultural obligations, we've got roles and responsibilities that we need to fulfil, and we need to stand strong together on our country, but hold strong our stories as well. So that's just a shout out to all the mob in the room. That's all. Vaya.
Across the land, it's a place where my people used to spend. Where the narrow linger, won't win off it day.
Today we've been bringing you recordings from the Australian Nuclear Free Alliance meeting held at Pitchy Ritchie Park on Nukunu Country over the weekend of 29th to 31st of August, to mark the anniversary of the British atomic test at Maralinga, to keep the stories alive and keep working to address the ongoing issues of chronic health conditions and contaminated land that continue to impact so many members of the Alliance to this day. And weapons testing is continuing to destroy Aboriginal country. As Aunty Sue talked about, she is campaigning to try to stop Southern Launch from testing rockets on sacred Gugatha land, waters and skies. And the issues of no consent are just as relevant today. There is a rally in Adelaide on October the 10th, and the Radioactive Show will be there. For all the details and to follow along, please go to West Mallee Protection on Instagram. For more information about the Australian Nuclear Free Alliance, go to anfa.org.au. The Radioactive Show was produced in the studios of 3CR Community Radio with the support of the Nuclear Free Collective at Friends of the Earth Melbourne, and distributed across these stolen lands called Australia, thanks to the Community Radio Network. Please join us again next week for more news and views on nuclear peace and energy issues. Bye.
Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We rely on the financial support of listeners like yourself to keep going. Will you help 3CR by becoming a regular donor today? Together, we can keep independent voices on air. Go to 3cr.org.au. And thanks for your support.